Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, it's been a little while since we spoke, but how are you both?
Pretty good, man.
Yeah,
Good.
pretty good.
Is that pretty good generally, or is that pretty good specifically with an Everton hat on?
No, pretty good generally.
Does that mean that you're not pretty good with your Everton hat on?
If you'd have asked me that 96 seconds into yesterday afternoon, I'd have been furious.
Well, yeah, there were a couple of thousand Evertonians who were equally furious at the
I
game,
would imagine there was, yeah.
and everybody else who was watching by whatever means they were watching. A
Yeah,
rare 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff as well.
one
And
of
you were
only
there.
two.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be there, and yeah. Forget what it's like going to the game if you haven't been for a while, and then you get there and you think, wow, this is great. Strange little ground, but yeah, good fun. Excellent. Anyway, let's get into it. So George, what were your thoughts on it? Yes, and I know you may have had some difficulty seeing it because you were
I was working. So I only saw the second half. So I think the pair of you should have a jolly good natter and inform me, because I didn't see the first half at all. I did see
Okay.
the second half, and I've got plenty of thoughts on that. But tell me what it was like watching it, and tell me what it was like, both of you. You watched it from different angles, but I mean, I've
Yeah.
seen both the goals and the sort of farce of the penalty and stuff, but that's not the same thing at all, is it?
No. It's interesting because the talk beforehand with a bunch of guys who known for many years, was whether or not we could come back from an international break and maintain the momentum that we took into the break after, the fantastic performance against Chelsea, and actually the good performance before that against Arsenal, although obviously the score didn't go our way on that occasion. And that was really the big question, whether or not we could or not. And because the feeling was, if we could perform anything like how we performed against Chelsea, we should come away with all 3 points. And how refreshing is it at this time of the season to be going into a game with a fellow European qualifier competitor, and think if we actually turn up, we're more than likely to win the game. The fact that we didn't win the game is due to the fact that we didn't really turn up.
That right? I think that for me, the issue was we didn't turn up completely. We started. I mean, the start was farcical, giving away a penalty in the first minute and a half. But once we got going, it took us 15 minutes or so to actually fathom out what on earth we were doing. I actually thought we were the better side for certainly half the second half of the first half. And for me, the issue was then, right, we've got level. If anything, we are on top. Whatever you do, don't come out of the dressing room for the second half flat. And for me, they did. And again, it took ages and ages, in my opinion, for them to get going again. Took Brentford's goal to get them going again.
Well, it yeah. I mean, we were never genuinely second best in the game, but we weren't. We didn't have our foot on the accelerator enough for me. It would, you know, it was. It well, it would. It certainly was nothing like the desire and determination that they showed against Chelsea. Now you could say, well, we're away from home, so they've got to be a little bit more, circumspect. Well, no, I disagree with that. You start off, it's 11 against 11. Technically, are they better than us? No, I don't think they are. I think that what they are is they're much quicker in their decision making about what they're going to do. And it's not all route one, but it is pretty direct. And we were trying to play football and play our way through them, but we weren't doing it with enough conviction for me. And it was only when Thiago scored his second that, in effect, it gave us the kick up the backside that we needed. So I was kind of torn between disappointment and pleased with the fact that they did come back twice to earn the valuable point. I would have been very, very disappointed had we lost the game, because I didn't think we'd played badly. I just didn't think we played anything like what we can play and that we showed against Chelsea and to a lesser degree at the Emirates, although, as Paul said, we didn't get the result at the Emirates, but we did play well. There was a little bit lacking there yesterday for my money, but thankfully, we got the equaliser and a very, very valuable point. But now the only trouble with that is it just puts a little bit more pressure on the remaining six games if we genuinely and I think we should genuinely be aiming for a place in Europe. And preferably, obviously we'd like Champions League, but that's not going to happen, I don't think. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, it's if we fin if whoever finishes sixth now gets the Champions League slot.
Really?
I'm pretty certain I heard yesterday that the Champions League places now go down to six.
I thought it was five, but
I didn't start.
I'm quite happy to if it was six. George, you made a good point. I'll get back to the game in a minute, but you made a good point actually that it was brought up in Moyes' press conference, and he was quite scathing about the prospects of us having Champions League football.
It wasn't scathing. It was that brilliant journalist from Radio Merseyside who raised it, and his eyes just went a bit wider. And you could, the subtext was clear. No, we're not ready for that. Absolutely was what he doesn't want that now. And I think he's right. Having watched Liverpool, Paris Saint-Germain, we would get obliterated on a scale that would take some time to recover from any of those decent sides in the Champions League. I think he's right. No, he wasn't scathing. He was just going that's he just gave you the impression that he would be thrilled to bits if Everton got into the Europa League. He thinks I think I got the impression that he thought we've got the squad to deal with that. The Champions League, no, we haven't. And personally, that's certainly chimes with my opinion of what's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think
Yeah, make qualify for the Europa League and then the summer shopping should make us strong enough to really challenge in the Europa League.
I think so, Andy, yeah.
I think the squad, I think if we went into a Europa League spot next year with the squad we've got now, with no further additions and no departures, we might do okay. But the fact that, if we do qualify, that fact alone should help in the summer transfer window, and hopefully any additions that come in will make us strong enough to not just compete in the Europa League, but actually challenge, if you get my drift. Not just make the second round or whatever, but actually have a real good go for it.
Well,
Well,
I'm just looking at the fixtures. Liverpool, West Ham away, City at the Hill Dickinson, Palace away,
we're finished at Spurs. Oh, Sunderland.
Sunderland.
We've got to go to Sunderland, yeah.
No, we don't have to go Sunderland. They have to come to us, and they've
Oh,
already
sorry.
beaten
Yes, yes, yes. Beg your
them.
pardon.
And
Yeah.
then Spurs away. So there's absolutely no gimmies there at all.
No.
So.
I mean, it might be a crazy thing to say, but only getting the point yesterday will sharpen the focus for maybe for the remaining six games. As you say, there's no gimmies, but in the past, we've nosed up gimmies and done better in the no chances.
Well, Can I just go back to what you said, Paul, that you kind of paraphrased the whole game by saying you thought we didn't turn up, really. Is that a fair summation of what you were saying?
Yeah. For those that are old enough, and the three of us are definitely old enough to remember this,
Was absolutely amazing for
the
that game.
analogy, the well, apart from you, George, of course, you're much younger than all of us. The analogy I would give, given that we hadn't played for, is it nearly 3 weeks, or felt like 3 weeks if it wasn't 3 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever, was. You remember in the old days when it was a cold, frosty morning and you went out to your car and you pulled the choke out and you started the engine up? That's how I felt Everton started the game yesterday. We were cold, and it took us a while to get going. There were gaps all over the pitch where you wouldn't normally think there were gaps. Dwight McNeely, who's generally outperformed, certainly say in the last third of the season, or the last couple of months, he's exceeded expectations, reverted back to the norm a bit, was essentially very, very weak and offered nothing and didn't help us at all defensively. And
Why
that's not.
wasn't Milton Armstrong on the pitch?
I don't know whether he was injured or not, to be honest.
Well, I saw Moyes' pre-match press conference. He said everybody was fit, that
Right.
Charlie Alcaraz was nearly ready.
Okay. Well, I don't know what the
Is
reason
he on
was
the
then.
bench, Armstrong?
I'd have to check. I know we're doing a podcast about the game, but I'd have to check.
I had the picture of the team sheet on my phone. I've deleted it. So it's only, when I saw what the team was, you go, oh my God. And never mind. Go on, Paul. You were there.
No,
Go on.
I think they're essentially two very similar teams. If you ignore the colours of both sides, the colours of the shirts of both sides, there wouldn't be that much difference between the two of us and the way that both of us played. So, they're quite a physical side, and they certainly matched us physically. And in fact, I think they outmuscled us for large parts of the game physically. And as I say, we were not quite as ready for the it didn't appear to be quite as ready for the game as they did. Now, it's to our great credit that we first of all came well we came back twice, one after the shock of conceding a ridiculous goal in the first minute and a half. And what Moyes must have said to those involved at half time. Branthwaite, Tarkey, and Pickford was at fault for giving away the penalty. One can only imagine that they're probably repainting the walls of the dressing room as we speak, because it was just so sloppy. And the moment the ball bounced over Branthwaite's head, you knew exactly what was going to happen because, it's always that thing, isn't it, about two central defenders. If one goes for the ball, the other one covers from behind. And the gap between Branthwaite going forward, and I know he had Thiago with him, but the gap between him going forward, getting in front of the ball effectively, ball bouncing over him. And Tarkey was nowhere. And the moment that happened, it was the first minutes of the game, the moment that happened, a goal was it was there. Okay, it ended up being a penalty, and they converted the penalty. But you could just see it unfolding in front of your eyes, and it was like, oh no, what are we doing here? And we didn't really respond immediately after that, neither. And had frankly had Brentford delivered better quality crosses, then. And had they converted some of the crosses that they did get on the end? I mean, they hit the woodwork twice, and Pickford made a couple of decent saves as well. They could have been out of sight.
Right, like the word Earl Dickinson.
And I know the mates I was with, I was probably at the harsher end of expressing my views about how we were playing during the game. A lot of them thought didn't think we were quite so bad. I was disappointed with that element of the game, the fact that we didn't start well, and certainly didn't start well in the second half, having clawed our way back into the game. But then, then there are positives as well. I thought Beto had a really good game.
Did it?
I think that was one of his better games for Everton, and I know he came off after 73 minutes, I think it was, but I thought he played really well. He harried the Brentford defence. A great header that he took. Physically, very very strong, and he looks a little bit more switched on when he's actually, when he gets possession of the ball with the back to goal, maybe just in and around the halfway line. In the past, he's always looked to sort of pass the ball backwards, and we've not been able to like develop from that. I got the feeling that there's a growing confidence and a little bit of maturity about his game,
It should be, shouldn't it?
in the sense that but not just from the goal scoring point of view, but just from the point of view of making a slightly bigger physical presence than he has done in the past, and given that slightly greater physical presence, gave him A, more confidence, and B, slightly more options and better attacking options than we've had in the past. So I thought he did really well. As I say, he did very very well for the goal. Should have scored that goal or the attempt that was offside that was saved by Keller for the second, I think it was Garnagay who had the first shot. Okay, he was offside, but he should have netted the rebound and didn't. But I thought he was good. And on a different day, had we started stronger than we did, maybe he'd have scored more than one. He scored, what is it, 4 in 5 games, and he's now scored 7 league goals. And if you remember at the beginning of the season, we talked about how many goals did we need to score in order to get to different parts of the league, and we said that we need to score 40 goals, basically one goal a game, in order to stay in the league, and we need to score 50 goals to be middle of the league, and we need to score maybe 60 goals to be in European football. Well, I don't think we're not going to score 60 goals in the season, and we still might qualify for European football. Part of that is a reflection of how good we've been defensively. But in those equations we talked about, given that it was always going to be a combination of Beto and Barry, could they get to 20 goals between them in the league? If you recall that conversation, we had it on several occasions. They're now at 13. And okay, there's only 6 games left, so they're probably not going to get to 20. But if they get to 17 or 18, they're not that far off it. And that'll be a good return. I don't think Barry's got a future at the club, and he doesn't look like he's playing as a guy who's got a future at the club. If for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked for him here. But Beto certainly, I think Beto is embedded in the club now, and he's a better player now than he was just a few months ago.
I'm distracted, Paul, because I've got Andy going. I've lost contact and I'm waiting to rejoin.
Oh,
And I don't
yes.
know what I can do about that. Can you let him back in? Is it the back door, Paul?
He's back.
Or is he?
Yeah, he's still on mute, but he's back.
Okay. Well, that's all terribly interesting. I must say it saddens me because I don't think either Beto or Barry are anywhere near the quality that we need. But, if Beto is embedded in the club, so be it. You know, he's never going to stint for effort. Although I must say, when I turned my computer on to watch the second half, he was walking about, and I thought, "What are you doing?" And maybe he was just puffed after a big first half effort, but he didn't work that hard. And the three or four times the ball got played up to him, he lost three of them. You know, they just the continuity he's supposed to provide didn't happen. But that was, you know, that's the disadvantage of only watching 1 half the game. I don't know how the guy played in the first half, and perfectly prepared to take your word for it. But if it was down to me, and we had options, I'd bin the pair of them for anything
sure.
like the guy who's centre forward for Brentford, for instance.
No,
Or I'd bin him for Brentford's forward scouting people.
Yeah, that's a fair comment.
Thiago, I think it is, isn't it? Pronounced. Streets ahead, absolutely streets ahead. I get that total, and he scored 21 goals in the league this season, second only to
Haaland.
And you know, he looked every inch a Premier League centre forward yesterday. So he scored three times as many goals as Beto has, and that showed, obviously. I'm not saying he's the final solution and he's the solution that we need
at the moment,
but I think given everything, he's probably at or about where perhaps Moyes might have thought he might have been at.
Yeah.
I thought the other player, I suppose two other players really stood out. James Garner just looks like a completely different player than the player that came to us. There's a degree of control and a measure about his game that wasn't there certainly when he first. I'm not saying it was his best game yesterday, because I don't think it was, but there's just something about him now that you think, actually, yeah, there's a very classy midfield player. And the other one is Kieran Dewsbury-Hall. I thought Dewsbury. I heard a couple of comments in the ground saying that I think he was quite playing as well. I thought he was exceptional yesterday.
There was a lot of people on social media last night saying that it was far from KDH's best game, but thankfully it was him that got that late chance and put it away.
Yeah, I don't understand that, to be honest.
I don't think he was as influential as he's been, but he's certainly a key element of Moyes' squad. There's no doubt about that. You know, when they talk about first name on the team sheet, obviously after Pickford, you would think that Garner and Dewsbury-Hall are two of the next three or four to be picked.
I would go as far as saying Dewsbury-Hall is the most influential player that we have on the pitch, notwithstanding Pickford in goal, but the most influential outfield player we've got.
That's kind of what Moyes said in the post-match conference that I just watched.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he was really, really singing his praises.
Yeah.
And also, interestingly, you know, you're saying that you think Barry's got no future at the club. The other person who, I don't mean, very early days, but I don't see a future for Dibbling at the club either.
It's difficult. Problem Everton have got is they can't really afford to dispose of him
because they lose money on him
because of the loss that they'll take on him, given, you know, the extraordinary fee that we paid for him. And I think Moyes might just think, you know, maybe he just needs a whole season at the club, and maybe he needs actually to have the close season and the summer, the pre-season with us. And maybe we might see a better player next season.
I sincerely hope so. But Moyes was very, very interesting, because they asked him about Tyler George, and he said, "Oh, I like him. I like him because he wants to score." And, you know, he only had like 15 minutes, 17 minutes yesterday, but he had three shots on goal in that time. And Moyes was very excited about that. And you could see it from his point of view. He's seen nothing of that from Dibbling. No ambition to, you know, Moyes was also saying how important it is in modern football that wide men get forward and get goals and you know, make a big contribution. And he was pretty plain that if he's given a straight choice, he's going to choose Tyler George. But he's only there for the season, isn't he? He's only on loan.
We've got an option, though, to buy him.
Oh, have we? Well, that might get taken up then.
He certainly plays with more intensity than Dibbling show.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, this is my take on the game yesterday, and my question to you both, because you both saw all of it, is what Everton were lacking yesterday was precisely that intensity. Yeah. The only time I saw any intensity was when Brentford scored and the team went, "All right, come on then, let's give this some." And you think, well, why have I waited? Mm-hmm. I'd only waited 25 minutes for it. But you're suggesting, the pair of you, that, you know, that the first half wasn't any more intense. That, how do we solve that problem? You know, Moyes was dead interesting in the post-match again. He said, "I was disappointed with the way we started both halves of that game." He said, "But I promise you, we don't send them out there to start slowly. You know, we do say to them." So if this is what I'm thinking about, is that we need another character in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who dictates that. It's like what Xhaka has brought to Sunderland. Somebody who goes, "No, we're playing at this tempo. We're not playing at that sloppy Joe tempo. We're not oofing it up the field, hoping for Beto to control it. We're going to play soccer properly." And we don't have that person who is demanding a level that is sustained.
I think you're right, George. I think the other point, interesting point about Tyree George when he came on, Dewsbury Hall was much more effective when George was on the pitch. And if you think back to the beginning of the season, Dewsbury Hall was like probably very effective at the beginning of the season.
With Grealish in the team.
Because he had Grealish in the team. Yeah. And George basically played the same role as Grealish had done earlier in the season, albeit with much more pace and was much more direct than Grealish was. And I just think, well, perhaps, actually, I think you've nailed it, George. If we had another player that could have that sort of influence and just basically pick up the team when the team isn't performing at its best, then maybe we will have less of those occasions. There wasn't, and we've talked about this in the past, and I think it's still the case. There still isn't that element of leadership in the team where, you know, a Ratcliffe or a Peter Reid or maybe a Tim Cahill. Philip Neville, even, albeit his limitations as a footballer, when things weren't going quite right, we just grab hold of them and, you know, this is what we, you know, remember what we've been working for all week. What were we told before we came out onto the pitch? We're not doing it.
We need a player who absolutely leads by example and sets the standard and demands that all the others meet his standards.
Yeah.
That's what they needed to, you know, I'm not knocking Tarko as captain or whatever, but that's what they need. They need a genuine captain character. And ideally in midfield, because that's where the games generally run from. You know, someone to actually get a grip of things and be absolutely demanding of everybody around him.
I think Dewsbury Hall could be that player, because it's really interesting when he scored. You know, there was three minutes of extra time. Added time, sorry. He scored with like 1 minute 30 of those, so 90 seconds left. He came over, celebrated only very, very briefly with the Everton supporters, then picked up the ball and then was like yelling at everybody to get back, so that we could kick off and try and go for the win. And obviously, it didn't happen. But it was really interesting to see him do that. And there's no doubt about it that he is, as I say, I think he's the most influential player on the pitch. I know Moments Ndiaye is actually Ndiaye is at moments very effective as against being very influential, and I think there's a difference between the two. Whereas Dewsbury Hall is actually influential.
And Ilman and Dai is more mercurial, isn't he? You know, when he's on song, he's absolutely electric, but he can have 10 minutes where you don't see him. And we need someone who's playing not necessarily 100 mile an hour, but 100% all the time. And constantly. I just wonder whether we've actually got a constant mouthpiece on the pitch demanding all the time, directing traffic, you know, directing operations on the field. A real gob. We need. I'm not sure we've got one.
No,
I'm not
it's a
sure
good.
we've. I'm not sure we've had one for a long, long time. And maybe that's part of what we need. Someone who's actually going to scream it, not necessarily scream, but certainly let their feelings be known about if a mistake's made or whatever, or if someone does something really good, be the pat on the back, the encouragement, well done. You know that. I mean, I'm sure they all do it, but I just think we need a really imposing character in the side.
No, I think you're right. I think I mean Tarkey, take for example, he's the captain, but he tends to be a passive captain in the normal course of play, and he only becomes reactive either in a defensive position, normally from a set piece, or when something's when there's been a foul or when there's been a bad reaction somewhere on the pitch. He's not that constant, is he? Sort of going round, getting the team. I hate saying this, but he's not. He's no Steve Gerrard in the sense that Steve Gerrard would go around the pitch and make sure that every Liverpool player who's playing was absolutely doing everything that they needed to do. And I hate saying that.
No, but that's the. We've got to be honest. That's the type of character we need. You know, like you say, a Gerrard for Liverpool, a Roy Keane at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let standards drop. He'd probably end up kicking one of the United players if they weren't playing up to speed, up to what he considered to be the standard that was needed. And that's what you get from winners. And that's the ingredient we're lacking, is that winning mentality. People,
That's a bit.
someone who's been there, done it, and knows what it takes and can instill that in other people, or demand it from other people and bring it out of other people. I mean, it's a lot to ask of one player, but those players are out there. We've just mentioned two there for a kickoff, and we've had them in the past. You know, Peter Reid, Bawley, Andy Gray. You know, people like that who will literally run through a wall for the team. Run through a brick wall, run on hot coals, whatever cliche you want to put to it. We've had those players, and that's the type of player that we genuinely need to turn this squad from being a decent squad into being a very good squad and a challenging squad, trophy challenging squad.
I'm going to answer that. I'm going to answer that directly in a second, Andy. George, I think were you trying to say something?
No, not really. I mean, in the sense that Bobby Moore never shouted at anybody, but I bet he was a fantastic skipper to play for or
He
to play
led by
with.
example, didn't he? Because he played to such a high standard.
Well, the same applies to, and it's going to make stick in my craw as well, Beckham, who was no captain at all, but he did say, you better come off with your shirt as sweaty as mine because I'm going to work my socks off here. And he never shirked. it. Now, I'm not saying that any of the players shirk it, but maybe there's a character thing about being a skipper. And if you haven't got one, and at the moment Everton haven't got one, I agree with everything you're saying about Tarko, who's a great man if people are kicking your players about, because he's there to go, oh, that's not happening. But he's not an influential enough player in the course of the match to G the players up. If you haven't got one of those, maybe the players, you know, don't sort of think about it. But I totally agree with you that what this squad needs is just someone to lift their ambitions, I think. What I saw yesterday was quite unambitious until Brentford scored, when they went, oh, well, we might as well have a go for it now. None of that had occurred before then.
I think it was more a case of, oh, now we've got to go for it.
Well, that's no good
I know, exactly. That's the difference. You know, to say, oh, you know, what you said, and having to go for it, you know, we have to go for it from the beginning, not wait till we, you know, till we're in a situation of adversity. Instead of chasing the game, we should be wanting to lead the game and stop somebody else coming back into it the way we I mean, it's great that we're finding a way to get back into games, but I'd far rather us be in front and keep people out than keep coming from behind.
At the moment, we
did it against Chelsea, and you know, that's the frustrating thing, is with, you know, everything that was so right about the demolition of Chelsea, and so much of it was lacking yesterday. I mean, personally, I blame the fact that they've had 3 weeks off because of them sodding international breaks. I don't think they lost momentum, and it obviously takes a lot to rebuild that momentum and get it going again. Hopefully, you know, you said before, Arkid, there's no gimmies in the remaining 6 games. So hopefully, you know, they'll build some momentum. They'll need some momentum going into the derby for obvious reasons, and then carry it on into the remaining 5 games after that.
Moyes was quite interesting on that point, because he actually said, I haven't heard it, but I read it. He actually said that he didn't feel like we'd lost momentum by not playing.
Right.
Well,
he sees a lot of things differently to us, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah. It didn't look like that, to be honest, from the from the stands, but that was his view. Could we talk about David Moyes a little bit? I know he's like one of my favourite topics to talk about. I don't, maybe I need to take a photograph of my bedroom just to prove that I don't have a David Moyes poster above the bed.
You've got David Moyes pyjamas, don't we, selling porkies?
Have they sold?
It's actually a quilt cover.
Oh, right.
Don't let anybody know, but it's David Moyes quilt cover.
Has he got ginger hair or silver hair on it?
He's definitely got the one I've got. He's definitely still got red hair. It's getting a bit washed out now, but he's still got red hair.
Dear me.
I can't say who the source is, and I can't say the circumstances behind the comments I'm about to make. But any ideas that this guy doesn't think that Everton A need to win a trophy, and B obviously not going to do so this season, but B shouldn't be qualifying for Europe, need their head examining. I've had a conversation with somebody that's very close to David, and boy, is the passion still burning?
No, you can see that.
Now, we can argue all day long about whether or not he's got what it takes to enable us to do that. And I think actually, with a couple of points that we were making a few minutes ago about leaders on the pitch and stuff, I don't think that's necessarily a reflection of David Moyes. I think it might be a reflection of the overall culture that's still within the club. And, you know, that takes time to change. I think it will change, but we all know that the culture within the club has been difficult for many, many years. We've allowed our, and actually, in the sense, it was also, this is a microcosm of the game yesterday. If you think about in recent years, we've allowed ourselves to get into extraordinarily difficult positions and found a way of getting out of them. So, in any other normal set of circumstances, Everton should have been relegated, probably a couple of times in the last few seasons, and we've gone through all of the reasons for that ad nauseum. But we found something within ourselves as a football club and individual players and the fan base to pull us out of those difficult situations. And I think that becomes part of your culture, that in a sense you don't fear the worst because you've experienced getting out of it. And I think in a sense there's almost that, still that feeling within the club. I don't think it's as prevalent as it was before, but we need to move on from, as you said, both said, reacting and getting back into a game, to taking the game by the scruff of its neck in the first instance, and being the proactive force, not the reactive force. But I do think that's still part of the cultural identity of the club, and because it's been there for so long, that's the case. But I do think it's changing. And the one thing that I was thrilled about speaking to the person I spoke to, and he was speaking about his conversation with Moisey, was how much he wants, first of all, to get into Europe this season, so that we can all experience being in Europe next season. But also then what it means for the club in terms of what the club can do this summer as a team that is qualified for Europe, and as a team that has demonstrably moved on from where we were when we left Goodison. He sees it as a real marker, as a real, if we can do this, and it's way beyond the expectations that they had at the beginning of the season. If we can do this, then it's, in a sense, it's validation, it's proof of what they're doing, and it will enable us to get much better, much higher quality players, and frankly, much more ambitious players. Because the problem that we've had for many years, and the problem that we've still got, and we will have until we actually demonstrate we're able to do things, is that if you've got ambition, there's still better clubs to go to than Everton. There's a whole load of reasons why you might want to come to Everton. It's a wonderful club. It's got great people. The players love playing for the Everton fans. The Everton fans, I think, unquestionably, are the best fans in the Premier League, without a shadow of a doubt. And it must be an absolute joy to play either at Hill Dickinson, or certainly the away games, where, and actually at the end of the game, you could, the bond between the fans and the players was fantastic and a real joy to see. But you need more than that. You need to be able to satisfy ambitious players' ambition. And we've not been able to do that for many years for many reasons. I think we're just on the cusp of being able to do that. So we find a player that we want, we find a player who's got big ambitions for himself, and we can hand on heart and with some justification turn around and say, we can match those ambitions, we can help you achieve what you want to achieve, and in doing that, you can help us achieve what we want to achieve. We've not been able to do that for such a long time. And I think both under the ownership of the club, but also particularly under the leadership of David Moyes, we're just at that point. And if we do qualify for European football, then we are at that point. And I think we'll see a very different pattern of recruitment over the summer as a result.
Let's hope so.
I hope all that's true. Can I just ask a question? I think you're wrong, Andy. I think the first five go into the Champions League. How many other European competitions are there? Is there some sort of Mickey Mouse thing that I can't even
Well, it's
remember?
the Europa League and the Europa Conference, which is the, if you like, it used to be the European Cup, Cup Winners' Cup, and the UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
Well, now it's Champions League, Europa League, and Conference League.
Okay.
There's still three levels.
And how many teams? So do the sixth and seventh teams go into the Europa League, and the eighth team goes into the Conference League? Is that it?
Well, no, because if you win the FA Cup or if you win the League Cup, you qualify. But then if you win the League Cup or the FA Cup and you qualify through your league position, it changes again. So it's slightly more complicated. It's likely that, well, it's almost certain that eight clubs, the clubs that finish in the top eight, will qualify for European football. It's
All right.
possible that. It's possible that a team finishing in ninth place can qualify for the Conference League, the Europa Conference or European Conference League this season. So, given that we're currently eighth, we would qualify for Europe.
But what he would prefer would be the Europa League, right? It's a level above it, isn't it?
I've been told that he thinks we can compete in the second competition, not the
Yeah, that's
third
the Europa
competition,
League.
the Europa League. Yeah, what used to be the UEFA Cup.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He
But
thinks
there's a
that.
lot of competition, and a lot of teams around us who, Brighton are no pushover to anybody anymore.
Yeah, but
Bournemouth.
There's a good reason for thinking that we can compete, and yes, there is, and there's a good reason for others thinking that they can compete. Because if you look at the performance of, what we consider to be bog standard Premier League clubs, they're all doing well in the second and third European competitions, and they've done well for a number of years now. Whereas, we're finding it more difficult to compete in the Champions League. It's not the case in the second and the third ranking competitions. England's sort of mid-ranked teams are much stronger than the rest of Europe's mid-ranked teams. Putting it
That's
very simple,
and
putting it
and
very simply.
I think that's their comment, yeah.
And apart from, we don't know, how Arsenal are going to end up this year in the Champions League. But what you're saying is that our Champions League teams are not as good.
Well, what I'm saying is that the competition within the Champions League is much stronger than it is in the other two competitions on a relative basis. So qualifying for the Europa League or qualifying for the Europa Conference, as an English club, you've got a competitive, you've got an immediate advantage over everybody else, because the Premier League is a much stronger and deeper league than most other European leagues. It may not be technically the best, and there's strong arguments to say it's not, but from a competitive point of view, which is why it's why Moisey won a European competition with
West
West
Ham.
Ham. And he genuinely thinks he can do the same with this Everton squad plus a number of players.
Plus one or two sensible additions, yeah.
Yeah. And we know what the where the weaknesses are. We need fullbacks, obviously. Yes, it'd be great to have a 20 goal a season centre forward. We know that, but it's
Well,
interesting.
the first target is solidify that qualification in Europe and then shop sensibly in the summer.
Yeah.
The first target is Liverpool.
Well, before we get onto Liverpool, not every Evertonian this week has been happy with the club, have they?
No. With the announcement of the season ticket increases.
Yeah.
There was an awful lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth about some of the price increases that are going to be
sort for season tickets for next year. 70, you know, upwards of £75 increases in per head in some cases, and people are voicing the opinion that, you know, of all the clubs, if anyone's still got, if you like, that working class fan base, it's Everton. And should the club really? The club have held season ticket prices for a number of years, or kept the increases as low as they can while we were at Goodison, and everyone's grateful for that. But, you know, they went up for Bramley Moor, and now they're expecting a big chunk more for season two. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, they can't win, and they can't win on it. You know, if they keep the prices down, they don't get the revenue they want, blah, 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 blah. But if they put the prices up, you know, people want value for money, ever more so in this day and age, with, you know, with the costs of everything being sky high and everything. And people want value for money, and are they going to get value for money for another 75 quid ahead? You know, if you've got three or four people in the household, father and two kids going to the game, it's a lot of money.
And is there any chance the club will back down, or is this just a fait accompli?
There's no chance at all.
Right.
And it's a sad reflection of, but the reality is, and people will not, I don't think some people will like me saying this, but football is no longer a working class sport.
No.
We can hold on to the idea that it is, and we can hold on to the idea that still many, many people who go home and away, you know, are of ordinary backgrounds, ordinary levels of income. And I don't mean that in any sort of derogatory sense at all. Far from it. In fact, the exact opposite. Their commitment is huge. But football, that's no longer the audience that football is catering for. And that is the reality of modern day football. And why is that the case? Well, the regulations are now designed to reward those clubs that generate the most income. Because yep. We're now moving into a situation whereby you can only spend a percentage of the revenue that you generate. You have to look at every single pound that you generate, and given that the different sources of income that you have. So you've got the media rights, the broadcast fees, which are largely fixed, and fixed until 2029. Mm-hmm. And the only variable, well, there's two variables, one where you finish in the league, and two, how many games you appear live in UK broadcasts. They're the only two variables that determine whether you get more money or less money. So you're obviously wanting to finish as high up the league as possible to generate as much income. But in order to do that, you need to spend more money on players, and you need to spend more money on wages to attract the top talent. Where else can you generate additional income? Well, most commercial deals are like 2, 3, 4, 5 year deals. And if you're halfway through that cycle, it's very difficult to improve upon them. Now, Everton are obviously going into next season, we'll have a new shirt sponsor, for example, and you know, which I think we're trying to do as many other commercial deals as possible. But the whole system is now built on maximizing the amount of revenue that the club can do, and mm-hmm. the easiest, and it this is not me agreeing with this statement, but this is me just stating it as a fact. The easiest target for generating more revenue than you did last year is the fan base. And that's true of every single club across every single division of English football. As a statement of fact, that is the case.
But
Whether
you
it's right
said,
or not, you can argue differently. So, Josh, kind of.
but I remember you saying ages ago that the percentage of a club's income that comes from the fans is dropping all the time. And I think you said something extraordinary, like it's less than 30%.
Yeah, it's for most clubs, it's between 20 and 25%.
And yet the fans are the easiest to hit, even though 70% of the income is coming from somewhere else.
It's coming from broadcast or from commercial revenues. Yeah, the problem we've got is that broadcasting commercial revenues are flat. They're not going up anymore, and in this crazy world that we live in at the moment. The macroeconomic picture generally is that things are going to get worse before they get better. So there's no great vision of broadcast fees or indeed commercial revenues improving, assuming that club stays roughly in this, the same place that it was in previously. Now, for Everton, it may be the case that we can improve on things because we've got a new stadium and because we're now competing for European football, that may see an uplift. But across the board, across the game, the only place where they can go to is essentially the fan base, and that will happen across every single club in the country. And the moment it happens in one or two clubs, then it has a domino effect. Everybody does the same, whether they want to or not. And I don't know what the view of the Freakins is because they don't talk about it. But the fact is that if every other club is putting up their season ticket prices by 5%, 6%, 7%, 10%, whatever the figure might be, then for us not to do that, we have to make a conscious decision not to do it, and have to have a different thought process in terms of how are we going to compete. There's only two ways that you can improve the quality of your squad. Three ways you can improve the quality of your squad: recruitment, coaching, and
Development.
development. Yeah. Recruitment is entirely cash led. How much money have you got to spend? Coaching to a degree is the same. You're competing for the best coaches in order to develop players more, and development at the younger age of the game, coming through the academy, like the Brentford model, the Brighton model of recruiting young players well and then selling them on, is a skill set in itself. So if you don't have those skill sets, or if you're still developing those skill sets, or those skill sets aren't as good as some other clubs that have got those skill sets, then it comes back to, well, we just have to generate as much cash as possible and try and make good our shortcomings, our technical shortcomings, by spending more money.
I can see that.
And it's an issue because it's going to affect an awful lot of people, and some people are going to have to make decisions that mean that they won't go and watch, they won't have a season ticket anymore because it's too expensive for them.
And so what you're saying about it no longer being a working class sport, it will become the sport of people who can afford to watch it.
If indeed it's not already that.
One of the things I was picking up over the last 48 hours is that people were saying, okay, if we've got to pay an extra whatever for a season ticket, then on particularly on game days, they will not be eating and drinking inside the stadium and paying exorbitant prices for food and beverage inside the stadium. They'll eat and drink cheaper outside, and maybe even it will have an adverse effect on souvenir shop revenues and whatnot. People are not going to buy, might choose not to buy every other kit and every other scarf and this, that, and the other. So, yes, so they'll gain. You know, I'm quite sure Everton will sell their requisite number of season tickets, but the game day the actual game day revenue, the spend in the stadium on game day, might take a serious hit. As people say, no, I've had to pay an extra whatever for my season ticket. You're not getting it on a pie and a cup of tea and anything else.
But to a degree, Everton are insulated against that because we've outsourced those arrangements. So there's not a direct correlation between what people spend in the club shop and what people spend in the concourses and what Everton receive.
Right.
So Everton might think, you know what? Yeah, we recognise that they probably won't buy the third shirt, or they won't buy, you know, an expensive Pepsi Cola inside the ground. But then that's not necessarily Everton's problem. That's the organisations that they've outsourced to.
How many clubs outsource that stuff, Paul?
Well, it's interesting. Generally speaking, almost all clubs do, but the trend is actually to unwind that because it's slightly complicated. The way it works at the moment is Everton receive a fee, say, from for all of the merchandising from Fanatics. But if we did it ourselves, our revenue would be higher, even if our profit margins were lower, and the amount that we can spend on players is determined by your revenue, not by your profits. So it actually makes more sense to have it in-house than it does out-house. But obviously we've got it in-house and we'll have it for a number of years. So I think the trend will change a little bit over the coming years, but it won't change anything. Nothing will change at Everton for the time being.
Okay.
But it, you know, if it is the case that people who somehow have managed to swallow the costs of the increased costs of watching football over the years no longer can do so, it's very sad for those individuals.
Yeah.
But I find it hard to be overly, and I know other people will say I'm wrong in saying this, but I find it hard to see that Everton can stand out in isolation against a move that is going just across football generally, if we want to be competitive.
And
that's
we
not,
do.
That's not giving them carte blanche to just, you know, raise the prices irresponsibly.
I think the other thing that will rankle with a lot of season ticket holders in their thought processes on renewing is, if you know, I mean, and I know you've explained that the idea of football being a 3 o'clock Saturday is for the birds these days. It's history. It's never going to happen that we go back to that, but people are, you know, enough people are voicing concerns that the amount of midweek games and silly time kickoff games, that surely is a factor that football, not necessarily Everton Football Club individually, but football and whole, has to take into account. That, you know, people are getting fed up with being, you know, Saturday 3 o'clock now becomes Thursday at 8 o'clock or Sunday at 7:30 in the evening. And it's, you know, I know there's a worldwide audience for TV and this, that, and the other, but at the end of the day, isn't it our game? And shouldn't, no. You know, shouldn't we? No. I mean, we've just been through Easter, haven't we? I mean, you know, when we were weaned on football, teams would play Good Friday, Saturday, and Easter Monday. You could have three games over an Easter weekend. I read somewhere the other day that hasn't been the case for over 40 years. And I thought, 40 years since at least two games on an Easter weekend. And it blew my mind. I'm thinking, holy smoke. I just found that incredible. And so few games over an Easter weekend. It just, I just struggle with it.
But no matter what I'm up with, people turn up, Andy. You know, they change the kickoff from 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock to quarter to four in the morning. People will fill the stadium. So the people who made those decisions go, the sheep will follow.
Yeah, but I beg to differ. I beg to differ, bro. I think, you know, if you watch some of these midweek games on TV, and it really doesn't matter who's playing, there are gaps in the seats. These are not 100% sellouts. They might be 100% sellout in terms of ticket sales, but not, are they 100% full stadium? Is every purchased ticket actually used? And I think that for me is the disappointment, is that people are paying the money, and then for whatever reason, you know, a silly midweek kickoff or a stupid Sunday night kickoff time, and they're not going. So that money they're spending to secure the seat that they want in the stadium they want to go to is for a minimum of 19 games. And the chances are they might actually only go to 12. So they've paid for seven games that there's a good chance they might not be able to go to. And I just think I just don't think it's right.
I couldn't agree more, Andy. I mean, but there's so much about the game that isn't right anymore.
No. These days you can't think, oh, I fancy going to that game, and you make your way there and buy a ticket, you know, either at the turnstile or from a ticket office. Those days are long gone. Everything's about in advance. And that doesn't give any room for manoeuvre. I mean, and the people who travel ridiculous distances, and I mean ridiculous in terms of the effort they put in, not the fact that they are ridiculous people. But, you know, a buddy of mine the other week who lives in Northern Ireland, you know, was asking about tickets for the game against United. And I said to him, you'll have to apply to the club and it's, you know, see if you can get a couple, but, you know, it's going to cost you. And when he put the whole package together, you know, the flights, the hotel, game ticket, blah, 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 he was looking at an awful lot of money. And then the date gets moved.
Yep.
And had he gone ahead and with that plan to come over, and they moved the game, can he get a refund from the airline company or the hotel or whatever? No. You know, and I don't think there's enough consideration for the fans. I really don't.
There can't be anybody who would disagree with that, Andy.
Well, I would hope not.
But it doesn't mean jack anymore.
No, I know.
It feels to me that that's the way, you know, that's the way football is at the moment. Or aspects of football is at the moment. You know, you can see the relationship between the Everton players and the Everton fans at the end of that match yesterday,
yeah,
and the Everton manager. So it's all very real if you're there and you can do it. But do the people who organise where and when Everton Football Club play give a monkey's fart about inconvenience to fans? You would be certifiable if you went, oh, yes, I think they care very much. They really, you know, put on top of the agenda. It's not the case.
No.
When do we play Liverpool? A week today.
Unless it gets moved again. Cynicism rose to the surface there. Sorry about that.
No. That's a big, big, big game.
Huge, yeah. Always is, always will be. Irrespective of where the teams are in the league and whatever, it's always a big game. Officially, it's 2 o'clock next Sunday, bro.
Right-handed.
Which surprised me. I was wondering why it won't be four. I wonder why it's not the 4:30 game, but let's not go into that.
Well,
It'll be on.
all those Liverpool supporters in Singapore have got to go to bed by 11 o'clock.
There's one or two blues out that part of the world as well.
Yeah. And let's hope that they go to bed with tears on their pillow. Kopi tears all over Singapore.
That would be rather fun, wouldn't it?
What a sight that would be.
Course, the
Right.
4:30 game next week is City and Arsenal.
Yeah.
That's why we're not the 4:30 game, because City are playing Arsenal, who choked yesterday big time against Bournemouth. Who I have to say, if you didn't see it, Bournemouth were absolutely excellent yesterday at the Emirates.
Good football team, aren't they?
Absolutely. They played exactly how we should have played at Brentford, without any fear, with total confidence. We know what we're doing. We know what they can do, but this is more about us. They were truly excellent yesterday. They were very, very good to watch.
They
Very good to watch.
look like AC Milan in their black and blue kit as well.
And seriously, they you wouldn't. A neutral watching that would have thought that they were top of the league with a 9-point lead over City. And
Right.
when did Arsenal get the dispensation for Arteta to go running just about anywhere up and down the touchline without getting booked, whereas Moise gets booked for celebrating a goal? And I didn't see them getting that dispensation, but still, we're splitting hairs now, aren't we? Or I am.
Right, gents, I'm calling time.
Fair play.
Okay, fair enough.
Been good fun. And yeah, right, let's talk after the derby and we can celebrate all those Kopi tears, not just in Singapore, but flowing down the Mersey past Bramley Moor.
All over Norway.
Sorry?
All over Norway.
Well, wherever you care to mention, really, but
Exactly, yeah.
yeah. Right. George, thank you so much.
Pleasure, mate.
Good luck with the rest of your performances.
Thank you very much.
You're two thirds of the way through the season. Just got to dig in for the final leg and qualify for Europe.
Way, nothing else to do.
Andy, thanks very much, mate. Take care. And
No problem. Cheers, Paul.
thank you to everybody for listening. If you've missed us, thank you. If you haven't missed us, well, tough, we're back. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Paul.
Cheers, man.